Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to speak on this project? Is there anyone that would like to speak on this project for, against, or anything just on the record? Go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Councilman. Name is William Russo, R-U-S-S-O, and it's I'm a resident of Ward 8. I had no questions until Councilman Lotto Sewer triggered a couple of questions from our old Warwick Sewer Authority days. Through the council chair, question one, has anyone conferred with the Warwick Sewer Authority reference this project?
Yeah, there is capacity in the actual design. We'll have to achieve a permit from the Warwick Sewer Authority. They can do it upwards to final plan approval. Prior to starting construction, they certainly, the applicant has to have approval from the sewer authority.
Okay, sir, thank you. Did they relate to you that there might be some infrastructure expansion needed to handle this concentrated project?
Right, not at this level of review. Again, before the planning board, the next application phase is the very detailed engineering phase. It's called the preliminary application step. That's where all of those details will be discussed with the sewer and water authority. You know, if a pump station or whatnot needs to be upgraded, that's something the applicant will have to do.
Thank you. And last question, if an increase in WSA infrastructure is needed for this project, is the applicant willing to defray any cost for the increased expansion? And again, I think I know where your answer lies in that, more discussions to come.
It is, but it's on the applicant to pay for the upgrades needed to serve their application.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Russo. Is there anyone else who would like to speak on this PCO 9-22? Okay, hearing none, Councilman Howe, can you make a motion to close the public hearing?
Mr. Chair.
We're going to close the public hearing.
Move to close public hearing.
Second. Second by Councilman McElroy. Do we do a roll call on that? And then we'll open up for the council.
Yes.
The clerk will call the roll to close the public hearing.
Mr.
Yes.
Mr. Foley? Yes. Mr. Gephardt? Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser?
Yes.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Snappy?
Yes.
Ms. Travis?
Yes.
9 yes to close the public hearing.
Thank you. I'm going to go to Councilman Howe first, then I'll come to Councilman Lattiser.
Thank you so much, Mr. President. First of all, if there's one thing that I think my colleagues have learned from me and my constituents have learned, my friends, my family, is I'm a stickler for process. I like process. I like due process. And one of the things that I've found from doing this, sometimes these processes take many. We learned tonight with the considering the Bucky Brook item, 6 years to get a process done in many different departments. I can tell you there were other projects that are 2 years. We voted on one last month of another development, 2 years in the process, sitting down working with them, 2 years in the process. And in those 2 years, there are planning boards, zoning board, there's community outreach, there's postings in the newspapers where people are welcome to go and from the very beginning, as well as state agencies and local city agencies. And I think Mr. Russo, as always, in a very class act manner, asked a question about the sewer authority. And before it comes before this council, and I'm not saying this to educate my colleagues or people who are aware, there's a process that has to be done. There's due diligence. Every department has to sign off on that, including DEM, state agencies, and sometimes, especially in Ward 3, because we have an airport smack dab in the middle of it, the FAA and the federal government have to sign off on it. So I would like to say that with that due process that was done and all the agencies in the first step, I can't stress enough how important it is to, when something like this is posted, to participate and give the planning board, the zoning board, and all the agencies that heads up, if you will, and get the answers, that the concerns, and address them. Because by the time it gets here, we pretty much have a checklist that's all been checked and due process has been taken. So I do want to say that. And I know for the last over a year, from my doing my phone calls and meetings, I'm not disvaluing questions. I'm saying the process was done and I'm comfortable with the process that was done. So again, for the clarification and the time, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President. So the speakers that came before us this evening certainly had some very good questions and certainly made some good points. One I'll speak directly to is Mr. Russo. As he indicated, we have quite a bit of history involving the Warwick Sewer Authority. And I would just point out that on May 4th, 2022, Director Betty Ann Rogers has signed off on this. And she stipulates the Warwick Sewer Authority has no objection to this application, no additional comments. And that was signed off on May 4th. As many of you know, I'm pretty involved in the construction industry through various organizations that I participate in. And I know for certain that the DEM restrictions and requirements regarding wetlands and setbacks and what you can do and what you can't do are very, very strict, tightly regulated, and especially overviewed by DEM. There's state codes, there's local building codes, et cetera, that these developers, or home builders for that matter, have to follow and have to adhere to. There's specific setbacks for building or doing anything adjacent within certain restrictions of wetlands. What's particularly important that has been presented to us by our director of planning, as well as the developer, is that any, at least this is my understanding from what was said tonight, I stand to be corrected if someone wishes to do so, my take on it and understanding is that the developer is responsible for any and all costs associated with this project beyond what we see. So if they have issues with contamination, hazardous waste, etc., they're on the hook for it. They have to mitigate it, not us. There's no responsibility on the city at all. That's what I believe was testified to this evening. There is no responsibility to the city. All of the onus is on the developer. Now, if planning or the developer wants to counter on that, by all means do so. But it's important that at least I and my colleagues have a clear understanding of that. They are responsible for any violations of DEM rules and regulations. If they put something up that's too close to a wetland, they're going to have to answer for it. They're going to have to take it down. In addition to that, besides the state inspectors, there's going to be our own local building officials and inspectors that are going to be overviewing that. So I don't have a concern based upon the information that's been presented to us this evening by our planning director and the developer that the city has any exposure to liability at all. Now, perhaps legal counsel might speak to it. City solicitor may want to speak to it. That's what I've heard tonight. Thank you, Mr. President.
Any other council members who would like to speak on this? Time. Okay, hearing none. Councilman Howell, do you have a motion?
Move favorable action.
Second by Councilman Foley and Councilman Lattiser. So this would be favorable action on PCO 9-22. The clerk will call for favorable action.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Gephardt? Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser?
Yes.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Sinapi? Ms. Travis?
Yes.
9 yes, motion passes.
Thank you, the motion passes.
Thank you.
Next up this evening is a second public hearing. This will be on PCO 10-22, an ordinance amending the zoning ordinance of the city of Warwick. Committee report, public properties.
Committee recommends opening public hearing.
Councilman Howe, for action?
Move favorable action.
To open a public hearing?
Open public hearing.
Okay, and you're making the motion to open a public hearing and second by Councilman Ricks. Okay, the clerk will call the roll to open the public hearing on PCO 10-22.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Gephardt? Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiser?
Yes.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Sinapi?
Yes.
Ms. Travis?
Yes.
9 yes to open the public hearing.
Thank you. We are now in the public hearing. Again, we are going to proceed the same way. I'm going to ask the director to make a presentation. Then we will ask if there's anyone to speak in favor of the project, of the zoning ordinance, anyone to speak against it, or anyone who would like to speak on it at all. Please speak clearly, and give your name for the record. Thank you. Go ahead, director.
Tom Kravitz, the city planning director. This is a separate agenda item, and while it's separate, it's very much the same. Now we're talking about the zoning amendment that's required as well. My description applies to this part of the agenda as well. I know, Mr. Lasso, you had a question about Gateway. We can talk about that now if you wish, but it's the same project, same application. I will say, I guess, at this point, Ms. Comar's comments about the previous agenda item, they are this agenda item with the zone change, they're relevant. One of the things that's important is to understand that it's okay to amend the comprehensive plan if something doesn't fit. And we acknowledge that up front. That's the first discussion the planning board had. They said, geez, we're taking away a piece of our industrial district. What do we all think of that? And they looked at the market. They looked at the fact that Kilver Street's there, and it's only 2,500 feet away from the intermodal. That was the key to the whole thing. That's the 30,000-foot view, trying to look at this in that manner. So you could make an argument that we could have actually extended intermodal as instead of Gateway to this area, but frankly, the city wants the tax revenue, and we want it quickly. And we didn't want to extend intermodal because they have tax benefits there that we didn't want to give them. And so there's so much to this, but I don't want to dismiss the residents' concerns. I guess that's my point. But I'll stop there. And if there's any questions, Mr. Lattiser, you have, we can start with those.
Thank you very much, Director. And again, I think it's important to again point out this is the first step in a three-step process. So if this was to move forward, there is still a number of instances where a deeper dive, if you will go in, and opportunities for members of the public, members of the council, members of the planning board and the zoning boards to weigh in. Is there any members of the council that have anything for the director at this time? No. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak out in favor of zoning change of PCO 10-22? Is there anyone here to speak in favor? Anyone here to speak in favor? Is there anyone here to speak against PCO 10-22?
Good evening. Michelle Comar, Ward 1. I'll echo my same comments. The comprehensive plan is the Warwick citizens' comprehensive plan. It's not the developer's comprehensive plan. We may need new housing, wrong location, not zoned for it. Not zoned for it. I can't tell you the extensive workshops, public outreach, public participation in developing a comp plan. It took us a long time. We were actually not in compliance with updating. We were late updating. And our comp plan is good for, I don't know, 20 to 30 years of planning. And we planned ahead for the city, and we didn't plan for this development. So you're voting on an ordinance for a zone change that is inconsistent with our comp plan today. And that's why the developer has to come before you with a 1-2 punch. Change the comp plan so we sit tight for the zone change. And they need to come here so that the planning board can say, this project is consistent with our comp plan because the council changed it. This is the Warwick Citizens comp plan. We all worked on it. If the planning department had foresight to say, we need a new vision for the city, things have changed. They haven't done that. They came project specific, I call it spot zoning, to change our comp plan without that form of workshops and public participation so that it matched a particular developer's needs and desires. And that's to change from general industrial to having a mix. And we don't have that on our future land use map in our comp plan. Again, this is the citizens of Warwick's comp plan, not the developers. The other question I have, well, this is my first question, is yes, DEM has jurisdiction over wetlands, and we're sure DEM will review this and issue a permit or not with conditions, maybe move and tweak the site plan to stay out of wetlands and buffers. But we also have a Warwick zoning, and it's section 504, freshwater wetlands regulations. And this is still in effect. I have a public records request issued by the city clerk a few months ago because it was obvious for another project that this was being overlooked. And there was a question, is this ordinance still in effect? So, yes, it is. And it will remain in effect until DEM adopts its new freshwater wetland regulations. The Builders Association wanted all the local regs out for wetlands and septic system setbacks. That will be deleted from our ordinance when DEM on July 1st adopts their new regulations. That hasn't happened yet. So my question is, does this project comply with city zoning ordinance, section 504, freshwater wetlands? And that briefly says there's a 50-foot setback that Warwick maintains from any size wetland. And it's a no construction of structures setback. So you can't put in a detention basin or a building. There's no structures allowed in our local 50-foot setback, which I said would disappear as soon as DEM updates their regs July 1st. So are they within 50 feet of a DEM recognized freshwater wetlands for any kind of construction activities, and what are those, please?
For the site plan specific questions, I prefer to have a plan here that I can see the dimensions off of. I don't know if the applicant has that. But while they're getting it, I will say and bring to knowledge that the state law allows cities and towns to amend their comprehensive plans 4 times a calendar year. We could do this 4 times if we wanted to in a calendar year. And the reason they do that is because the market changes more quickly than comprehensive plans that have lives of 10 and 20 years now. They require 10-year periodic updates. The last one was adopted, as you alluded to, it was in 2013. Something happened to the market since 2013, and residential seems to be stronger now. And the 20-year horizon is to coincide with the decennial census more appropriately. So I think what the initiative is to amend the comprehensive plan seems like we're doing it on the fly. But it's not the case. We're just trying to work quickly with an investment that's going to bring good revenue to the city and a part of the city that the city wants to see urban scale growth. With that, maybe I'll let John answer the question on the setback.
Yeah, thank you. And we're just going to keep it on the zoning now. We have already addressed the comp plan, so we're just going to keep on specific questions to the zoning.
The specific question, yes, the plan presented before the planning board does maintain the 50-foot buffer from any wetlands. And there was a comment made earlier about wildlife habitat. At the planning board master plan meeting, at which the planning board unanimously granted master plan, and I would note for the record, the planning board also, in communication through the director to the council, gave unanimous recommendation on both the comp plan amendment and the zone change. But at that planning board meeting, Scott Rabideau, who I would respectfully suggest is a wetlands biologist in Rhode Island without peer in this state, testified that there would be no adverse impact on any wildlife habitat associated with the wetlands or otherwise as a result of this project.
So let me just recap to make sure I heard the answer correctly. So through the council president, so there is no alteration of land, no construction of any structures within 50 feet of any flag recognized DEM.
That is correct.
Freshwater wetlands, correct?
That is correct.
Thank you. I know we're not talking about the comp plan, but I agree with director's comments that the state allows comp plan changes, which would allow this zoning ordinance to be consistent with it. But there's a proactive phase the planning department can do in updating our comp plan. This is totally reactive, and it's spot zoning. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else to speak against this project?
Good evening, Kate Fitzpatrick. I'd just like to revisit, actually, I had a few questions for Mr. Bolton. Did I say that correctly? Are you here representing lots 145, 146, 147, all three lots?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear your question.
Are you here representing lots 145, 146, and 147?
I don't represent lots. I represent a client, AR Building Company.
Okay. Is that client the owner of those three lots?
They are not the owner of any of the lots. They're the equitable owner. They have the property under agreement with the current owner.
Is the owner of that property here to speak on behalf?
I don't know why. I'm not sure the relevance of that question to the zone change, ma'am.
Well, I would like to ask if they've received a letter of compliance. So Representative Howie, you talked about process and how that goes on. And I was just curious if you have had a letter of compliance from DEM on this property.
Council President, if I may, we're here in the council. I would respectfully suggest the council's here at this stage after already amending the comprehensive plan to
correct. We're just going to talk about what is before us. PCR 10-22, the ordinance that is before us. It's the only thing we can speak on. We can't talk about, previous owners or what's DEM going to do. We can only speak about what is before us this evening.
Okay, so we're speaking on the zone change, correct, from general industrial?
Correct. We are talking about the zone change right now.
Okay, so my question is related because there will be an environmental land use restriction that will restrict it to industrial and commercial land use. Would that fall under this zoning change? So when I speak to, basically, there's a process in DEM. When you remediate properties, you have a remedial action work plan. You come up with a letter of compliance from DEM.
Again, though, ma'am, we are not DEM. They will do their things. We can only vote on what is before us. If the next step, if DEM doesn't approve it, it doesn't come back to us. So I can't speak for DEM. He doesn't work for DEM. We don't represent DEM. So we only can talk about what is in this resolution in front of us this evening.
Okay.
Again, this is the first step in what could be three steps. There will be a deeper dive and another opportunity for you and other individuals to ask these questions before the planning and the zoning boards as if this were to move forward. Again, we can't speak for DEM. We can only speak to what is before us this evening.
Okay, I was speaking to kind of the larger process and the restriction on the land use, which is commercial, industrial, but what I'm understanding is that's a conversation for another time.
Solicitor Walsh.
Mr. President, if I may. Councillor, the property is being developed specifically on lot 145. Is there any land use restriction that's pending, proposed, or otherwise relevant to that particular parcel?
Absolutely not. As I stated on the record earlier, there is no such restriction, remedial action plan, or any active DEM regulatory action with respect to that one lot that we're developing. Correct.
Thank you.
I guess my question is, the zone change is not just for that one lot, correct? It's for multiple lots?
Yes, the language that is proposed in this ordinance change impacts multiple lots, all on plat 278, and they're all itemized, but it's lots 30 through 42, 103 to 114, and 144 through 147. And they are all being changed from the various items that they currently situate, which is some of them are general industrial, some of them are A7 residential, and some are A7 with a PDR overlay. And all of these are being proposed to be zoned gateway.
Okay, so if I were to ask the planning board if they have seen the remedial action work plan for those lots, the letter of compliance from DEM, or the environmental land use restriction, can I ask that to the planning department? Has that been presented to the planning department for this zone change?
Go ahead, Director.
What's happening here is respectfully convoluting the notion of environmental land use restrictions. And again, they don't exist on this property of the application, but this council can change zoning irrespective of whether or not a property is a brownfield or has land use restrictions. They're mutually exclusive tasks. And I think that's just important to get into the record.
Do you have a letter of compliance from DEM on those properties?
No.
Do you have the environmental land use restriction on those properties?
No, I did not research whether or not there's environmental land use restrictions on every property subject to the zone change to ironically prevent spot zoning.
Well,
to Ms. Komar's point, this is what the planning board talked about, and I'm be anxious to see you guys back at the planning board when we deal with this at preliminary, because this is the exact discussion that the planning board is legally created to have.
Were you aware that there will be an environmental land use restriction on those properties?
Again, we can only talk about what is before us, not stuff that is going to go before the planning board at another time.
The environmental land use restriction would restrict that to commercial and industrial use only?
I believe he's answered your questions.
Yes.
Director, have you anything more to add?
Yeah, I don't. I'm aware of ROPs, remedial decision letters, remedial approval letters. We have extensive experience in redeveloping brownfields. We've done it in all the towns I've worked. I get it. I understand it.
I guess I'll leave my last point as this isn't finished. We don't have all the information. So I really encourage you to do your due diligence and not allow a zone change on a property that's still pending. It's still up in the air. We don't have the land use restriction yet. There will be one. There will be a residential development abutting a brownfield. There's no fence around this. Children will be playing in these wetlands. Pets will be out in these wetlands. This property was cleaned up for industrial and commercial use, and to put residential, to put citizens of Warwick to risk their health and safety playing in those wetlands, out there with their pets, spending time out there. There's nothing around them. There's Route 37, there's hotels across the street, there's no residential area for them there. You're gonna go in the wetlands, it's gonna be nice, it's gonna be peaceful, and that wetlands is part of a remediated property that's not finished. You don't have those documents in your packet today because they don't exist yet. This process is not finished yet. DEM has not finished this process. It hasn't been approved. It hasn't been finalized. And I really caution you, before you vote to allow this, to just ask for that process to be finished, to be wrapped up, and to take a look at all that. Because these are the health and safety of our residents here in this city that really matter. Not the developer, not the tax revenue. This is children playing on this land. That there is contaminated soil stored on right next door that was only cleaned up, the wetlands were only cleaned up for industrial use.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to speak out against this project? Is there anyone else that would like to speak against this project? Is there anyone that would like to speak on this project at all? Is there anyone like to speak on this project? Anyone else would like to speak on this project? Okay, hearing none. Councilman Howe, can I have a motion to close the public hearing?
Motion to close public hearing.
Second by Councilman Foley. Roll call to close the public hearing. A yes vote is to close the public hearing.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley? Yes. Mr. Gephardt? Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Latessa?
Yes.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Sinapi? Ms. Travis?
Yes.
9 yes to close the public hearing.
Thank you very much. The public hearing is closed. I have to agree with what the resident spoke about. This is not the final step. Mm-hmm. There are still a lot more things to go. I agree with her. This is for preliminary approval, and then it go. If this were to go, it would then move forward, and it would have to go back to the planning board, and that is where you do this deep dive. And if they don't get what they need from the DEM, it doesn't move forward and it doesn't come back to the city council. So I agree that this is not the final project. There are still a number of steps that need to go, and that is part of the process. So Councilman Howe, I'm gonna take questions, but Councilman Howe, do you have any questions or comments?
Thank you, just a quick one. In the planning board and zoning boards that are appointed by this body as recommended by the administration upon recommendations of this body, who are citizens of this city. Thank you.
Councilman Sinapi.
Given that this is far from the last step and that there'll be plenty of other checks and by those who are far more qualified to do so than us, I'm more than willing and able to vote in favor.
I'm sorry, Councilman, I didn't catch that.
Did it only come through a little bit? Sorry. So given that there are plenty of other checks between here and the finish line, and especially by people who are far more qualified to do so, I'm more than willing to vote in favor at this time.
Mr. President.
Thank you. Councilman Latticer.
I also feel that with all the discussion and conversation that was had here this evening, some very interesting questions, some very good points by all, those are going to have to be addressed when it goes to the planning department. That's above what we're doing here tonight. Good questions. That will be addressed with the planning department. And then it comes back to us again, possibly. So that's why I'm going to be supporting this item. It's not over. It's not done. The race isn't over. The race isn't finished. At the end of the day, I need to hear what the recommendations are going to be from the planning department after all of the comments and discussions that we've heard tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilman Ricks.
Some wetlands are very dangerous, and that shouldn't be diminished. There's a wetland in Ward 2 where children literally died, not from environmental hazards and that caused cancer or similar illness over many years, but quickly. There's a wetland in Ward 2 specifically where there is a massive sinkhole and an unsuspecting child managed to become trapped and sank to their death. There was recently, a few years ago, a development that was approved in that area. This hazard was known about. We have a process here that allows us to make sure that hazards like this are controlled. So, as part of the approval process after the zoning change, and that's the stage that we're at here tonight, part of that additional process was that a fence would be put up. And so before any houses are built that abut that wetlands where children may live in the future, there's going to be a very large, tall fence. And the neighbors are also going to be telling the stories. We're going to keep that oral history of why the fence is there and why it's dangerous to go down there, in addition to having that large physical barrier to prevent kids from going on down there. Before it was approved to be a residential subdivision, was actually a school right back there, Christopher Rhodes Elementary School. So I certainly agree with my colleagues. I wanted to share that particular example to bring this to light, that no, just because we are approving a zone change or voting on the approval of a vote of a zone change this evening does not mean that children are going to be put in harm's way. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments from members of the council? Hearing none, Councilman Howe, do you have a motion?
Move favorable action on PCO 10-22.
Second by Councilman Foley. And Councilman McElroy. I just want to say I was very impressed with this public meeting tonight. I thought there were some excellent presentations, very professional. I want to compliment both sides for bringing this information together. And if this were to move forward, I think everyone's got a lot of homework to do, and it's going to be a good process. So I just want to thank the residents for coming out this evening. This was a very important discussion, very informative and very professional. So the clerk will call the roll for favorable action.
Mr. McAllister?
Yes.
Mr. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Gephardt? Yes. Mr. Howe?
Yes.
Mr. Lattiso?
Yes.
Mr. McElroy?
Yes.
Mr. Ricks?
Yes.
Mr. Snappy?
Yes.
Ms. Travis?
Yes.
9 yes, first passage.
Thank you.
Thank you. First passes. At this time, I'm going to ask if I can get a motion to take a 5-minute recess. Councilman Lattiso. Second by Councilwoman Travis. All in favor? Aye. We're in recess. At this time, we're going to go back into committees. The next committee to meet is the Ordinance Committee.
So the Ordinance Committee will convene at 8:55 p.m. First up is acceptance of minutes from the April 18th, 2022 meeting.
Move to accept.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Next up is PCO 8-22, an ordinance to prohibit parking on the northerly side of Narragansett Bay Avenue, west of Crawford Avenue. This is Councilman Lattiso in second passage.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We had spoken about this at length at the last meeting. Having said that, I would respectfully request favorable support on PCO 8-22.
Do any members of the committee have any questions or comments? Any members of the council have any questions or comments? Any members of the public have any questions or comments? Seeing none, do we have a motion?
Move. Favorable action. Second passage.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Next up is PCO 12-22, an ordinance in regards to the placement of no parking either side signs on Beechwood Drive and on Charlotte Drive, east of Robert Avenue, and no parking this side signs on the northerly side of Charlotte Avenue, west of Robert Drive. This is Councilman Gebhardt in first passage.
This was supported by a traffic study and request favorable action.
Any questions or comments from the members of the committee? Any questions or comments from members of the council? Any questions or comments from members of the public? Seeing none, we can entertain a motion.
Move favorable action.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Ordinance concludes at 8:57 p.m.
Next up is the Public Safety Committee.
Thank you, sir. Public Safety Committee comes to order at 8:57. First order is the acceptance of minutes from the committee meeting on May 2nd.
Move to accept.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. PCR 5522, a resolution in regards to removing no parking either side signs on Hopkins Avenue and Collins Avenue. For action, Councilman Gephardt.
So this is some, I request favorable action.
I'm sorry, I really couldn't hear
you. Request favorable action.
Okay. Request is favorable action. We have a motion? Oh, I'm sorry. Any questions from the committee? Any questions from the council?
I'll just say this is cleanup from the parking and no parking work we did in Potawatomi earlier in the year, but we didn't specifically ask for the removal of signs where they were not ordinanced and not required for public safety.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions from the public? Seeing none, do we have a motion?
Move favorable action.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The committee, 859.
Next up is the Intergovernmental Committee.
Well done.
It is now 9 o'clock and the Intergovernmental Committee is now in session. The first order of business is acceptance of the minutes from the committee meeting held on May 2nd, 2022.
Second.
Have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
The first order of business is PCR 61-22, a resolution in regards to amending the City Council Rule 27 regarding reconsideration. Councilman Lattice.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this resolution was a result of the last council meeting, actually. One could say that I put it in because I was upset as to the result of the reconsideration motion. The actuality of it is I was upset because of the rationale of that section in Rule 27. With that said, I see no point to delay addressing it if something doesn't make sense and if something appears to need fixing, then I want to do that. So Rule 27, it requires a motion for reconsideration from the winning side of the vote, which is fine. And I think that makes all the sense in the world. Where I don't think it makes any sense, and I think one of my colleagues may speak to how it flies into the face of Robert's rules, is where a member of the winning party must second the motion for reconsideration. How does that make any sense at all? So you have a situation, whether it be for or against, you have five people who make, in this particular case, voted against a particular item. And immediately, and when I say immediate, I mean immediately, a member of the winning side had the brainstorm and said, you know what, I want to reconsider this. Perhaps the testimony prior to the vote had some impact and it settled in after the vote was taken. Now comes Rule 27 that says a member of the prevailing party, in this case it was the yeas, must second it. How does that make any sense? If you have five people or four people that are on the winning side of a vote, do you really think anyone is going to second for reconsideration? Reconsideration is a request to reconsider the vote. Let's have a little bit more discussion on it. I've had a quick thought that has changed my mind. You don't get reconsideration by having a rule that says a member of the winning party or prevailing party must second that motion. That doesn't make any sense. Now, I agree that that situation has only come up a couple of times since I've been on the council. I don't know how many. It's happened a couple of occasions. Sometimes something just doesn't strike you in the same way. That doesn't mean because that particular rule, whether it be Rule 27 or 20 or 19, it doesn't mean that because you've done it that way in the past, that it shouldn't be reconsidered or changed if it doesn't make sense. This, in my opinion, is a classic example of the deck being stacked. It's a classic example because member of the winning party, prevailing party, must make the motion. Then a member of the winning party has to second it. I don't see that happening. And I think that's wrong. I think the second needs to come from the membership of the city council and then revisit it, have the discussion, and take another vote. Otherwise, reconsideration means nothing. In addition to that, and I'll let some of my other colleagues speak, but I believe that there were also several members of the council that wanted to be added to this as co-sponsors, and I will certainly leave that up to them, and I will defer any further comments on my end to my colleagues, and I would like to hear what their feelings is on this. Thank you.
Any request questions? We've added as a co-sponsor. Thank you.
Any questions from the committee?
I'm just going to wait till the end for my comments.
Okay. Councilman Howe.
Chairman, I apologize. Chairman, I saw that the council president had his hand up, and I know it's difficult for you to see, so I'll refer to the council president, and if you don't mind, I'll come back for my comments. Thank you.
Not at all. Council president.
Thank you. I don't think this is an issue that's that big of a deal. It's come up one time since I've been on the council in 5 years. All I want to get on the record and make a comment is I just think that it is a poor practice and a bad precedent to start immediately trying to change council rules after one specific instance. At the beginning of every legislative session, the city council body votes on the rules, and then you can also make amendments going forward as well. We did that last year. Councilman Sanapi had some suggestions on some rules that he would like, that he wanted to see changed. Councilman Gephardt, myself, and we put together a package. We had a discussion on that, five or six different rule changes, and we made that happen. I'm a little concerned on just starting to do one-off rule changes. Again, this is not, this hardly ever comes up. There's barely any 5-4 votes. And if there are, it's even less that someone wants to change their vote immediately. So I have, it's not the rule itself that I'm worried about. I'm just worried about the practice. Again, you don't want to set a precedent where every meeting we're changing one rule because someone is upset about something that happened at a previous meeting. And that may not be what one of the sponsors is saying, that maybe this rule is always bothering or something like that. But just for perception, it looks like sour grapes. It looks like I'm upset because I wanted to reconsider. I think the grounds that Councilman Lannister made make a lot of sense. I just worry about starting the precedent of one-off rule changes. Again, this is total inside baseball. I don't feel any constituent is going to reach out one way or the other on this. I don't think this is something that needs to be done immediately. It's been there since the start of the council. Again, I think it's affected one time. It just happened to be last week or 2 weeks ago. So my comments are not on the actual Rule 27 itself. I support bringing together packages of rule changes, so we're not doing them one-off. I think it's a good exercise. I believe we did that twice this year. We did a, you know, voted on the rules at the start of the session, and then we did a rule change on the package. I am sure that there are other rules that could be considered and changed. So I just want to preface my thoughts with, I just am a little concerned about the process of one-off changes immediately following one specific incident or rule. These rules have been in place for a long time. If we want to change them, that's great, but let's not start to practice one-off changes. I like the process that we've done before, and that's my position at this evening. Thank you.
Councilman Howe.
Thank you, Councilman. I have to say I agree with that comment. We had the rules at the beginning. I was a little, it was very obvious that when there was a motion made in the last meeting on a very close vote, there was a second and it said it had to go by the prevailing side. I sat in this chambers from 2011 on before I came on the council in 2017. I would come to the meetings, not every meeting, not every month, but I would come, but I would witness, just to give you an example of where even the rule as it is written, I hate to use the word manipulated, but could be manipulated, where someone who was at the end of the voting would then vote, who intended on voting against, or the non-prevailing side, would change their vote at the end so they could second a discussion. The concern for that, and I kind of did research, I think some of you know I'm a Robert's Rules of Order geek. I did do the research on where this started, and what this does is, I'm not saying it happens on this council. What I'm saying is one of the reasons, the purposes of the rule that is also carried over in Robert's Rules of Order that has been also put over into our ordinance is it can become kind of a hijacking of a meeting. I'm not saying that is the intent from this, so please don't take it that way. I'm going to where it derived, this rule derived from. So someone could, they could go back and forth and still either delay a council vote. They could filibuster the council vote, or overtake the council, if you will, to on one item or numerous items that they may be against or for. They could push, again, it comes down to the control and the honor and the discussion within the council and understanding our duties of a thumbs up, thumbs down, are also our responsibility and duties to reach out to our colleagues when we feel something strongly about something and having that discussion, or at least putting it out there during the conversation like we're having now, to say, here's why I'm strongly for it, here's why I'm strongly against it. In conclusion, I will not be supporting this for the simple fact that Rule 27, as the council president said, we voted on it at the beginning of our term, and I don't like changing things in mid because of a situation. Secondly, I do believe in maintaining a sense of decorum and rules within the council and honorable discussion. And when that discussion ends and then it becomes time to vote, I do believe that that's where we get to do, and we have the accreditation.